In 1829, Tim's Yearbook, 1848-235, in Persia fell a substance that the people said they had never seen before. As to what it was, they had not a notion, but they saw that the sheep ate it. They ground it into flour and made bread, said to have been passable enough, though insipid. That was a chance that science did not neglect. Manna was placed upon a reasonable basis, or was assimilated and reconciled with the system that had ousted the older and less nearly real system? It was said that, likely enough, manna had fallen in ancient times because it was still falling, but that there was no tutelary influence behind it, that it was a lichen from the steppes of Asia Minor, up from one place in a whirlwind and down in another place. In the American Almanac, 1833-71, it is said that the substance unknown to the inhabitants of the region was immediately recognized by scientists who examined it, and that the chemical analysis also identified it as a lichen. This was back in the days when chemical analysis was a god. Since then his devotees have been shocked and disillusioned. Just how a chemical analysis could so botanize, I don't know, but it was chemical analysis who spoke, and spoke dogmatically. It seems to me that the ignorance of inhabitants, contrasting with the local knowledge of foreign scientists, is overdone. If there's anything good to eat, within any distance conveniently covered by a whirlwind, inhabitants know it. I have data of other falls, in Persia and Asiatic Turkey, of edible substances. They are all dogmatically said to be manna, and manna is dogmatically said to be a species of lichens from the steppes of Asia Minor. The position that I take is that this explanation was evolved in ignorance of the fall of vegetable substances, or edible substances, in other parts of the world, that it is the familiar attempt to explain the general in terms of the local, that, if we shall have data of falls of vegetable substance, in, say, Canada or India, they were not of lichens from the steppes of Asia Minor, that, though all falls in Asiatic Turkey and Persia are sweepingly and conveniently called showers of manna, they have not been even all of the same substance. In one instance the particles are said to have been seeds. Though, in Comte's Rendus, the substance that fell in 1841 and 1846 is said to have been gelatinous, in the bull. Si. Nat de Neuchâtel, it is said to have been of something, in lumps the size of a filbert, that had been ground into flour, that of this flour had been made bread, very attractive looking, but flavorless. The great difficulty is to explain segregation in these showers. But deep sea fishes and occasional falls, down to them, of edible substances, bags of grain, barrels of sugar, things that had not been whirled up from one part of the ocean bottom, in storms or submarine disturbances, and dropped somewhere else. I suppose one thinks, but grain in bags never has fallen. Object of amherst, its covering like milled cloth. Or barrels of corn lost from a vessel would not sink, but a host of them clashing together, after a wreck they burst open, the corn sinks, or does when saturated, the barrel staves float longer. If there be not an overhead traffic in commodities similar to our own commodities carried over this earth's oceans, I'm not the deep sea fish I think I am. I have no data other than the mere suggestion of the amherst object of bags or barrels, but my notion is that bags and barrels from a wreck on one of this earth's oceans, would, by the time they reached the bottom, no longer be recognizable as bags or barrels, that, if we can have data of the fall of fibrous material that may have been cloth or paper or wood, we shall be satisfactory and grotesque enough. Proc. Roy. Irish Academic, 1-379. In the year 1686, some workmen, who had been fetching water from a pond, 7 German miles from Memel, on returning to their work after dinner, during which there had been a snowstorm, found the flat ground around the pond covered with a coal black, leafy mass, and a person who lived near said he had seen it fall like flakes with the snow. Some of these flake-like formations were as large as a tabletop. The mass was damp and smelt disagreeably, like rotten seaweed, but, when dried, the smell went off. It tore fibrously, like paper. Classic explanation. Up from one place, and down in another. But what went up, from one place, in a whirlwind? Of course, our intermediatist acceptance is that had this been the strangest substance conceivable, from the strangest other world that could be thought of, somewhere upon this earth there must be a substance similar to it, or from which it would, at least subjectively, or according to description, not be easily distinguishable. Or that everything in New York City is only another degree or aspect of something, or combination of things, in a village of Central Africa. The novel is a challenge to vulgarization. Write something that looks new to you, someone will point out that the thrice accursed Greeks said it long ago. Existence is appetite, the gnaw of being, the one attempt of all things to assimilate all other things, if they have not surrendered and submitted to some higher attempt. It was cosmic that these scientists, who had surrendered to and submitted to the scientific system, should, consistently with the principles of that system, attempt to assimilate the substance that fell at Memel with some known terrestrial product. At the meeting of the Royal Irish Academy it was brought out that there is a substance, of rather rare occurrence, that has been known to form in thin sheets upon marshland. It looks like greenish felt. The substance of Memel. Damp, coal-black, leafy mass. But, if broken up, the marsh substance is flake-like, and it tears fibrously. An elephant can be identified as a sunflower, both have long stems. A camel is indistinguishable from a peanut if only their humps be considered. Trouble with this book is that we'll end up a lot of intellectual roués, we'll be incapable of being astonished with anything. We knew, to start with, that science and imbecility are continuous, nevertheless so many expressions of the merging point are at first startling. We did think that Professor Hitchcock's performance in identifying the Amherst phenomenon as a fungus was rather notable as scientific vaudeville, if we acquit him of the charge of seriousness, or that, in a place where fungi were so common that, before a given evening two of them sprang up, only he, a stranger in this very fungiferous place, knew a fungus when he saw something like a fungus if we disregard its quick liquefaction, for instance. It was only a monologue, however, now we have an all-star cast, and they're not only Irish, they're Royal Irish. The Royal Irishman excluded coal blackness and included fibrousness, so then that this substance was marsh paper, which had been raised into the air by storms of wind, and had again fallen. Second act. It was said that, according to M. Ehrenberg, the meteor paper was found to consist partly of vegetable matter, chiefly of coniferveo. Third act. Meeting of the Royal Irishmen, chairs, tables, Irishmen. Some flakes of marsh paper were exhibited. Their composition was chiefly of coniferveo. This was a double inclusion, or it's the method of agreement that logicians make so much of. So no logician would be satisfied with identifying a peanut as a camel, because both have humps, he demands accessory agreement that both can live a long time without water, for instance. Now, it's not so very unreasonable, at least to the free and easy vaudeville standards that, throughout this book, we are considering, to think that a green substance could be snatched up from one place in a whirlwind, and fall as a black substance somewhere else. But the Royal Irishman excluded something else, and it is a datum that was as accessible to them as it is to me. That, according to Gladney, this was no little, local deposition that was seen to occur by some indefinite person living near a pond somewhere. It was a tremendous fall from a vast sky area. Likely enough all the marsh paper in the world could not have supplied it. At the same time, this substance was falling in great quantities, in Norway and Pomerania. Or see Kirkwood, Meteoric Astronomy, p. 66. Substance like charred paper fell in Norway and other parts of Northern Europe. January 31, 1686. Or a whirlwind, with a distribution as wide as that, would not acceptably, I should say, have so specialized in the rare substance called marsh paper. There'd have been falls of fence rails, roofs of houses, parts of trees. Nothing is said of the occurrence of a tornado in Northern Europe, in January, 1686. There is record only of this one substance having fallen in various places. Time went on, but the conventional determination to exclude data of all falls to this earth, except of substances of this earth, and of ordinary meteoric matter, strengthened. Annals of Philosophy, 16-68. The substance that fell in January, 1686, is described as a mass of black leaves, having the appearance of burnt paper, but harder, and cohering, and brittle. Marsh paper is not mentioned, and there is nothing said of the conifer veo, which seemed so convincing to the Royal Irishman. Vegetable composition is disregarded, quite as it might be by someone who might find it convenient to identify a crookneck squash as a big fish hook. Meteorites are usually covered with a black crust, more or less scale-like. The substance of 1686 is black and scale-like. If so be convenience, leaf-likeness is scale-likeness. In this attempt to assimilate with the conventional, we are told that the substance is a mineral mass, that it is like the black scales that cover meteorites.